This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, the educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world. My name is Pete Caliendo. I am your host. Thanks for joining us. We are thrilled today to have another great show. First of all, we want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, on the other side of the window, and the Lineup Media Group, the best podcast company in the world. Check out all their shows at lineupmedia.fm. Don't forget, before we start, just to mention a few things. Go to our social media. We've got Facebook, facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. Our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Don't forget to subscribe if you are a new listener, and thanks for being a new listener. Thank you to all our current listeners. You guys have been great. You've been sharing all the social media around the world, and we appreciate it. We've got some great information on all our social media. Check out our Twitter at BaseballOut. Join, and we'll get you all kinds of great tips when it comes to the development of the game of baseball. Love getting your emails at info@baseballoutsidethebox. Keep sending them. We keep responding right away, help you in any way we can. Now, today's topic, it's another great one. We continue to hit the world with different areas of the development of the game. This time, another very, very important topic, sports nutrition and dietary supplement safety. One thing I love about the person we're going to talk about and his company, love the slogan, fits perfect with our podcast. We help athletes, coaches, and parents win. Food first approach to improving athletic performance. Now, we love it because we also believe that in order to educate all, you know, our players, we've got to reach the athlete, the coaches, and the parents. It's a three-prong effect. So our guest today, I'll tell you briefly a little bit about him, but you can check out his whole background on the website. And again, we bring you, we feel, some of the best innovative minds in the game of baseball or sports in general. His name, Tavis Piattoli. Now, Tavis is the education program manager for the Taylor Hooten Foundation, where he has the opportunity to speak to high school, colleges, conferences all over the world, along with major league ballparks, and the dangers of performance-enhancing drugs and dietary supplements. You remember Donald Hooten Jr. being on the show for an hour talking about performance-enhancing drugs, the dangers, and all that. Well, Tavis has been working with Don for a long time. So now he's also the co-founder and director of the Sports Nutritional Education for My Sports Dietitian. You can go to MySportsD.com, an online sports nutritional educational company that helps athletes of all levels improve their eating habits to enhance performance, recovery, and health through the guidance of a licensed sports dietitian. Check out the website. He's got also a newsletter there where you can join and get updated information on everything that we're going to be talking about. Now, he also serves on the sports dietitian and nutritional consultant for the Tulane Institute of Sports Medicine, NFL's Player Association Brain and Body Program, Fairchild Sports Performance in Houston, and Covington Orthopedics. He was a sports dietitian for the New Orleans Saints from 2006 to 2013. He was also the sports dietitian. Actually, he worked on the nutritional programs for boxing champions Bernard Hopkins and Roy Jones Jr. So he's worked with the elite athletes. He's worked with young kids. He's also worked with current Olympic, NFL, MLB and NBA athletes in various colleges and high school programs in the United States, speaks all over the U.S. So we are thrilled to have, again, Tavis Piattoli. Tavis, I want to welcome you to Baseball Outside the Box. It's a thrill to have you.
It is an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I am excited and looking forward to talking with you guys.
All right, Tavis. Well, let's get started because we I've always talked about a couple things. I've talked about, vision being important. I've talked about the mental part of the game being important. And then, one thing I wanted to add in there, I call them the top three, but this, it obviously is at the top also. But sports nutrition, that's something that, I think is important for young athletes, that it's kind of, we kind of underestimate, and a lot of young kids, we don't get them started till they get older. And in the U.S., especially, one thing that I have found, and I'm sure you'll be telling us all about it, that, you know, obesity and things like that, you know, eating habits have become an issue when it comes to young kids early, and that does affect their playing habits. Now, first thing I want to do is let's talk about the journey of, you know, because people are going to ask, why sports dietitian? Let's talk a little bit about the journey that you had with how you got started a little bit and how this is kind of going to evolve into our talk.
Yeah, you don't really hear much about the term sports dietitian, but really it's evolved into really what our professions are. I mean, there's a lot of dietitians that work in the industry, but, you know, we sports dietitians are board certified. We specifically work with athletes in the athletic community. So I chose this field because I originally wanted to be pre-med and be a pediatrician. That wasn't a good combination my first semester at LSU, because I thought having too much fun in pre-med was a good combination, and just wasn't. So I got interested in nutrition probably the year before I started college, because I lost a bunch of weight. I played high school football, was about 260 to 270 pounds, and realized, hey, I'm not going to play at the next level, I'm too short. So I had to do something. I had to change my behavior, because my eating habits were pretty poor. So I lost about 40 to 50 pounds in a three-month period, you know, doing things that probably was just eliminating fast food. And that was probably too fast, but to me it helped kind of boost my confidence and got me interested in really putting good things in my body. So after I realized, hey, being a doctor is probably not going to happen, I found a book, went through the curriculum, and said, you know, I found nutrition, and I saw sports nutrition under the dietetics term, and I'm like, you know what, I love sports, I love nutrition, let's go check this out. And I walked into a class of about 100 girls, three guys were in there, and I'm like, I must be in the wrong place, there's no way this is the right class. It happened to be a human ecology class, talking about all things life cycle nutrition, and it was the right class. And after a few classes, I was like, you know, this is really cool stuff, this is going to be my major. And then my passion was always, once I finished school, became a dietitian, to try to work with sports teams.
You know, Tavis, I want to reach out to a lot of the parents out there that are, you know, starting off with young kids in sports. Now, you know, everything we're going to be talking about, obviously, is going to be a general habit of everybody. I mean, everybody should be following these criteria. But specifically in baseball, you see a lot of young kids that, you know, early on, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, that are overweight. Can you kind of hit on in baseball why, you know, we know being overweight's not good, but how does it affect the baseball player especially?
Yeah, and I mean, I see both sides. I mean, I see kids, you know, there's kids that are overweight, and there's a lot of kids that are underweight. Probably 80% of I work with a lot of high school baseball kids on an individual level, and 70% of them are trying to figure out how to get bigger and stronger. But there's also that other side that, like you mentioned, how does weight affect? And it really depends on the position. It really depends on, you know, how much mobility. I mean, you're not going to see too many shortstops and middle infielders overweight. You're not going to see too many center fielders overweight, because they need to have that mobility and that speed. You know, on the corners, maybe the first baseman, probably the catcher might be a little bit bigger. But if you look in Major League Baseball, you don't see too many overweight baseball players like you maybe have in the past. But, you know, the side effects could be, if kids are not eating well and they are struggling with their weight, that could increase their risk of injury. It's going to probably slow down, you know, their body's ability to react and have hand-eye coordination speed. We don't know based on data, because I don't think there's really any data to say if you're overweight, this is what's going to happen. I mean, there have been obviously overweight athletes that have been successful, but at the same time, you know, your risk of injury, putting all that stress on the body is one of the first things. But number two, putting poor quality foods in your body is going to slow recovery. It's going to probably increase or decrease your body's ability to have the type of energy it needs. You're probably not going to build the amount of muscle that you want, which just limits your ability to reach your goals. On the opposite side, you know, kids are trying to gain weight, and a lot of these kids don't really understand the amount of work they're doing and what they need to put in their body. So being underweight also has disadvantages, because I work with a lot of pitchers, and these kids are trying to throw 90 miles an hour, but they're 30 pounds underweight. Can't do that. It's not going to happen. And a lot of it comes with, they're not putting enough food to match the amount of activity, because a lot of these kids are just doing way too much.
Now, interesting you brought up pitchers, and let's stay in that for a second, because we've had a tremendous amount of injuries in the last 10 years when it comes to young pitchers. I mean, there's a lot of research of kids having Tommy John surgery at 12, 13, 14 years old. So you're saying one of the effects could be that they don't have enough weight on them that could affect their muscles and could affect the way the body's moving and the injuries that could occur from throwing a baseball hard?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think, number one, kids are doing something they shouldn't be doing. They're playing baseball year-round. There's hardly any rest for a lot of these kids. They go from club team, travel ball team, school team, you know, especially from the pitching side. If you're throwing and throwing year-round, even Dr. James Andrews has said, hey, this is not smart. Your kids should not be throwing that much. You combine that with not really spending a lot of time in the weight room and really building up strength, you're just creating a recipe for disaster, especially when you throw in the poor nutritional habits that these kids have. And I worked with about probably 8 or 9 Major League Baseball pitchers, you know, and really high-level guys that really take great care of their body. And, you know, we've talked about that numerous times, is, hey, you know, what do you think about some of these younger kids? And they just kind of frown upon that year-round activity, constant excessive use, because excessive stress on the elbows, excessive stress on the shoulders. And that's why we try to focus on from the nutrition side is, what are some anti-inflammatory protocols? Like after, let's say, Mark Melanson, I work with him, he's the closer for the Giants. We talk about, all right, after you're done, or even if it's whoever it is, even if it's a starting pitcher who might throw 80, 100 pitches, when you're done, these are the foods that are going to help you recover a little bit faster. And, you know, obviously the pro guys take it a lot more serious because it's their job. The high school kids are thinking, you know, they're not really thinking about that. They're just thinking, what do I need to do to throw harder? Well, we need to invest some time in your diet. You need to take 3 months off. Get in the weight room and get a little bigger. Don't throw year round. That's only going to be a disadvantage for you.
Boy, you brought up some great things when it comes to food. I mean, you said, you know, it could increase injury, slow recovery, you know, lack of energy, lack of muscle. I mean, those are a lot of things that could really affect young athletes when it comes to, you know, participating in a sport and doing it at, you know, at a high level at any age, whether you're 10, 12, 15. I don't think it really matters because you're still trying to produce, you know, the best you can as a player. Now, you talked about some foods. Before we get to the actual foods, well, let's talk about the parents. You know, what are some tips that parents, because parents ultimately are going to be the ones that are feeding the kids. The kids aren't feeding themselves most of the time. And I can tell you from experience, and this is just my experience, that, you know, there's a lot of parents that are not feeding their kids really well. I can see from when, you know, from when we take them on trips internationally, some of the things that they feed them when we're not with them. So let's talk about the parents, their responsibility, how important that is, and some of the foods that, you know, they can actually help, you know, with their kids develop a little bit better.
Yeah, the first thing I kind of want to just discuss is really nutrition is their secret weapon for any of the parents that are going to be listening. You know, if you invest a lot of time and money in so many other things, but if you're not investing in the food and the fuel that's going to actually give your son or daughter the ability to perform, it's going to be, you're almost wasting your time, because you can train, you can throw, you can hit all you want, but I see so many kids eat poorly and they don't reach that goal. So number one is meal timing. I think that's the most critical thing I see the most when I look at a food log, you know, for 3 days, and I say, okay, what can we do? I see big gaps, meaning kids are going 5, 6, 7 hours with no food in their body, and that's just something that we have to correct right away. And research has shown if you eat every 3 to 4 hours, you're going to have good balance, you're going to have good blood sugar stability, good energy, you're probably going to reach your body fat goals if the food that you're eating is good, in good balance, and we'll talk about what that is. But meal timing is number one. Eat every 3 to 4 hours. That's the first thing. Breakfast is so critical if you're a young athlete. You know, if you're older and you're trying to lose a little weight and you're an adult and you have a desk job, you know, skipping breakfast is not the end of the world. But if you're a young, growing, developing individual and you're trying to build muscle, get stronger, skipping that first meal of the day is not smart. And mainly because your body's coming off a long period of time when it hasn't had any calories. Maybe 8 o'clock was the last time you ate. If you go to school in the morning and you don't eat until lunch, that's 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock. That's 15 or 16 hours since you've eaten anything. And chances are you're going to practice after school. So you're going to try to survive on one meal from 8 o'clock the night before all the way to probably 6 o'clock the next day, which puts you in a huge energy deficit, and it just basically causes your body to burn muscle for energy. So we have to start with breakfast, and then pretty much after breakfast, every 3 to 4 hours, we want to try to get some kind of meal or snack. Now, people say, well, what does that mean? What kind of foods? Well, it's just a good balance of foods. Most people know what to eat. It's just doing it is really being consistent. So in the morning, you know, it could be some good protein sources of eggs, or even make a smoothie, you know, turkey sausage, some sort of lean protein mixed with quality carbohydrates, oatmeal, whole grain cereal, whole grain bread, fruit. You know, and fruits and vegetables are so important. I mean, I know it sounds so elementary, but from the athletic performance side, These are your anti-inflammatory foods. These are foods that help your body heal, recover faster, boost the immune system. So if you're playing, you know, hopefully some of these kids are playing multiple sports and just getting a lot of activity, their immune systems can become compromised if they don't eat well. So it's just a good balance in nutrition. And every 3 to 4 hours, I find is really important for these young athletes.
You know, I was very lucky when I was a young kid. You know, my parents came over from Italy, and, you know, and one of the things you see in Italy is they do eat well, and the food that they eat, everybody thinks in Italy, you know, that, you know, people are eating a lot there. Well, they may be eating a lot, but they're not gaining a lot of weight because of the quality of the food. And but one of the things that my parents always instilled in me was great habits. And as soon as I started, you know, as a youngster at 5, 6 years old, eating properly, I can see now at my age, I'm following that. So if someone is struggling with eating habits, you know, or eating the right things, how do they begin by, you know, changing that?
Peter, you hit the nail on the head, habits. Because most of America, whether you're a young athlete or adult, you're looking to try to accomplish an outcome, whether it's weight loss. Most 70% of people are trying to figure out, how do I lose weight? And that's an outcome. Weight loss is an outcome. And usually the outcome is affected by what habits we employ. It's no special diet, no special gimmick, no supplement that's going to fix that. It's what you do every single day. For these young athletes, you know, it's getting, like you said, it's getting in the habit of doing it. And I always say, let's look for one deficiency in your diet. Let's look for one habit that you're not doing very well. For the adults that I work with, I say, hey, pick one thing right now. If you could do one thing differently with your diet that you think would help you get to the next level and help you reach your goal, what would that be? And for some people, it's like, well, I need a meal prep. I need to cook food in advance because it's causing me to eat out 50% of the time. For the young individuals, especially those young athletes, it's, hey, you need to bring food to school. You cannot rely on the school food nutrition program and also the vending machine to supply you with quality calories. So one of the biggest things we focus on is have a plan. Develop a good nutrition plan. For the young kids, what I try to tell them to do is take some time and make some snacks. Take a Sunday, take a day off, and put all of your snacks together for the week. Make 20 ham sandwiches, turkey sandwiches, peanut butter and honey sandwiches. Make 20 of them. Put each one of those in a Ziploc bag. Let's make some trail mix with nuts and granola and raisins and take a measuring cup and put it in the Ziploc bag and make 20 of those. Nutrition bars, fruit, whatever that is that they enjoy. That way when they wake up in the morning on, say, Monday, they say, all right, here's my a.m. snack between breakfast and lunch. Here's my before practice snack. Here's my after practice snack. And just by starting that process, they get in the habit of eating often. And after a couple of weeks, it's like it is just part of their regular day. It's no different than putting their books in the bag. It's like, all right, here's my snack, here's my lunch. And they're just, it's repetition. So you hit the nail on the head when you said habits.
Yeah, I love those ideas. And for everybody around the world, we got coaches, players, and parents. Listen, you could reach Tavis at his website, mysportsd.com. Join his newsletter, contact him. You know, Tavis, let's talk about that. Let our audience know. I'd like for them to know, because I was looking at the website, there looks like there's a supplement plans. You help them out. Explain a little bit about the website, how that can be helpful to individuals and also all the players out there.
Yeah, my sports dietitian, I was actually founded by myself and an high school athletic trainer. You know, we realized the big need for nutrition education at the young level. And, you know, we actually have a lot of great free resources on our website, from podcasts to webinars to actually athletes' meal plans. But the cool thing that we're launching that's coming out really soon is a mobile app called Eat to Win. And really, this is going to be kind of a game changer because there's no nutrition app out there right now that tells you what to eat. Most of them are all tracking devices. You have to put in what you eat, and then it tells you how many calories. And people just hate to do that. No one likes to write down all that stuff. But now, what they'll be able to do, and anybody can use it. I mean, we originally designed this for the athlete, but at the same time, we have adults that are like playing with it, going, "Wow, what about me?" Well, sure, it pertains to anyone. So you can put in your height, your weight, what your goal weight is, how much activity you do, and when you would like to achieve that goal weight within a reasonable time frame. I mean, if you put in you want to lose 20 pounds next week, it's going to show up and basically cut you off and say, no, we don't allow that to happen. But, and then once you do that, it gives you a calorie goal, you hit meal plan, and then you can hit breakfast, and there's a ton of options there for you. Whether you like meat, if you're a vegetarian, a vegan, we have tons of things, restaurants for any age and ability. And that's going to be launching really soon. It's going to be free. It's going to be really cool. We hope it really changes the way people eat. And that's our goal with that company, is just to give resources so people can change their eating behavior and habits.
Fantastic. And here's one question I always have. and I think if I have it, a lot of people in the audience will have that. I want to try to address it. When they do go out and pick specific foods, whether it's parents or whether it's the actual players going to the supermarket, and you're looking at the food, you know, and you look at the nutritional part of it, what's the main thing to look at in the back, you know, where it talks about the nutritional facts?
You know, that's a really tough question to answer because there's really no set guideline. I mean, you know, the one thing I try to encourage people to do is try to buy the majority of your groceries on the outside of the grocery store. So the outside, don't go in the aisles too often. Obviously, there's some stuff that you need to get in there. But outside of the grocery store is going to be most of your fresh produce, your lean meats, some of your dairy products. That's where we're going to get most of the nutritional value. Inside, obviously, you get some breads and nut butters and nuts and things like that that you may need. But most of the inside is where all the processed stuff sits. So if you can limit the stuff that you buy on the inside and stay on the outside, you're going to be good. Now, again, it really just depends on what the product is. So if you're on the outside, I would say, like, let's say yogurt, for example. There's probably 40 brands of yogurt. So one of the things I try to encourage people to do is try to keep your sugar intake for those yogurts like less than probably 6 to 8 grams, because some of these yogurts have 20 to 30 grams of sugar, which is equivalent to a soda. You know, same thing with a lot of the products on the inside. I mean, you know, if you're looking at pasta, you're not going to see sugar in there, but everybody's fearful of carbs. They're like, oh, carbs are bad, carbs are bad. You know, we have to remember there's no one food or no one type of food or nutrient that causes us to gain weight or lose weight. The research has shown that over and over again. At the end of the day, it's about calorie consumption. If you're eating too many calories, no matter where they came from or they come from, you're going to gain weight. If you're eating less than what your body's burning, regardless of the macronutrient distribution, you're going to lose weight. There is some science to show, hey, having, you know, equal amount of protein and enough protein is important. But, you know, it's really hard to answer that question because it really depends on, you know, I'd have to know, hey, what product, if you're looking at this product, this is what you should look for, because it's not really a one answer.
No, and you know what? But I am thrilled that you brought up one important word, and I believe it's a killer, and I want you to really address it because it's coming from you. I think it'll mean a lot. And we see this in all our players and all our kids. All the time, I see kids coming to practice. You know, they got a big Coke in their hands. You know, and or whether sometimes that's a Diet Coke. Most of the time, it's a regular Coke. The sugar has got to be a killer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a place for sugar. You know, somebody hearing this might be like, "Oh, all sugar's bad." Well, that's a bad answer because the research shows, you know, completely different. I'm not an advocate to consume a lot of sugar. You know, kids are going to consume sugar whether you like it or not, but if they are going to consume sugar, the place to consume it is during and after exercise. So at least you can use that quick-acting carbohydrate as a source of fuel. The worst place to use sugar or have sugar is when you're sitting down and resting, because then, you know, again, at the end of the day, sugar just doesn't automatically convert to fat. It's got to be in caloric excess before it does that. If you eat too much fat, it's going to convert to fat if you're in caloric excess. Same thing, you know, and possibly protein, not the case. But at least with fat and carbohydrate, that's the case. But at the same time, kids are consuming way too much sugar, way too much processed foods. You know, I have a 6-year-old daughter, and every once in a while, she's like, I want Sprite. I'm like, no, I want Coke. No, you know, we don't buy that stuff. Now, am I going to deprive it for her forever? No, I'll let her be a kid, and every once in a while, maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, she'll have a couple of ounces, you know, just because, hey, if I deprive it, she'd probably go to college one day and drink two liters of them every single day just to spite me. But at the same time, it's about balance. You know, like I said, when I was younger, I ate so much fast food. I ate a lot of, you know, processed foods because my parents didn't stop me. And I didn't know any better, and I'm not supposed to know any better. And now I'm trying to, you know, change that process with her. But at the same time, the same thing with the athletes. I tell them, look, if you're trying to make it to the next level, or if you're just trying to perform, these are foods, and I kind of label them for the high school athlete: carbs, proteins, and fats. State championship carbs, proteins, and fats. District championship carbs, proteins, and fats. Miss the playoff carbs, proteins, and fats. And the miss the playoff stuff is like, you know, your sodas, your pastries, your cookies, your candy. But at the same time, I say, look, that's 10% of your diet. If you want to eat that 10% of the time, that's fine. The stuff in the state championship category, that should be 70 to 80%, 90% of your calories. That's where you're going to perform at a high level, and that's where you're going to recover fast and have that energy.
I love the way you address the sugar issue. That's excellent. Now, here's the part that, you know, what I, you know, baseball outside the box, we believe that in developing players, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that you got to educate players, coaches, And the one thing we forget all the time, I think is important, that it's not just about educating those two individuals, but it's educating the parents also, you know, because they're the ones, especially in nutrition, they're going to be buying these products and feeding the kids. Now, what do you say to parents? Because this is a big question. And you mentioned sugar, you know, not a good time before the game or before you do something activity-wise. What should young kids prior to a game consume to help their productivity, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, so pregame meals are always a great question and a big question that I get a lot of. And first thing is, you know, when it comes to that is timing. You want to consume a good pregame meal about 2.5, 3, 4 hours before. 3 hours is kind of a good window, you know, and you really, a couple of things you want, a couple of guidelines here. You know, you don't want a lot of fat. You don't want a meal heavy in fat because it's going to sit in the gut and it's going to basically take a long time to digest and it's going to make someone feel pretty sluggish. So especially these high power athletes that are, you know, baseball players, football players, someone that's going to be playing for a long period of time and burn a lot of energy. The first thing is you want is, you know, probably 50% of your plate is some kind of good quality, low fiber carbohydrate. So rice, pasta, potatoes, whole grain bread. I'm a big fan of things like have a turkey sandwich with fruit and hydrate really well. Or have some chicken or fish with rice, some peas or corn, because you don't want a lot of fiber too. Although beans and broccoli and cabbage are all excellent, they're gas-forming foods. So they cause your, you know, your stomach to feel bloated and distended. That's not ideal before competition. You know, if you're home, they're really nutritionally balanced. So I always say go with some type of light sandwich, low in fat. Don't eat anything fried. Don't eat fast food right before, you know, a game because, you know, you're going to feel miserable. I've seen parents between games go to the concession and get nachos and cheese and potato chips. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, your son is going to feel like like garbage that next game because they have these showcases or these weekend tournaments where they're playing 2 and 3 games. And I'm always like, hey, pack a big old snack bag. Bring PB and honey. Bring our peanut butter and a low-sugar jelly. You know, have some nutrition bars, some trail mix, some bananas, some stuff that's just going to fuel you in between those games. And honestly, again, carbohydrates are important. We hear so many bad things about them. Unfortunately for athletes, if they're following a low-carb diet, they're going to see a decrease in performance, especially if they're a high-power athlete.
Tavis, what about during games? You know, sometimes an athlete might be a little hungry during a game. Should he eat or should he just skip and wait till after the ball game?
Absolutely. They should be eating something because let's just say you play a 9-inning game. I'll use some of my major league players as an example. You know, their pregame, if they have a 7 o'clock game, they're going to eat around 4 o'clock. And because they're at the ballpark all day. They get to the ballpark for 12. They start their arm care, their workouts, their rehab. You know, they start kind of getting warmed up. Some of them may even work out a little bit. And then, you know, they have to get a snack. They eat at 4. Then come game times at 7, it's not going to end until 10 or 11 o'clock. So for these guys that are starting, you know, 6:30, I'm like, hey, have this liquid drink or have this snack. And usually the snack could be something with a little bit of protein, carbs, and a small amount of fat because that's going to keep blood sugar somewhat stable. It could be a half a, you know, half a sandwich. It could be a handful of nuts with a piece of fruit, you know. And then every 2 hours or every couple of innings, we're rehydrating. Maybe we throw another handful of nuts with, you know, with a banana or peanut butter. It could be a half a sandwich. It could be a nutrition bar. It really just depends on what works for that individual because everybody's different. There's no one food that's magic. And you see that. You see people promoting all these magic foods. And these foods aren't magical. It's just you have to figure out what works for you. I have a guy that's a major league pitcher that we realized when we had him tested, you know, things like turkey, broccoli, and coffee – caused high inflammatory reaction. So we had to eliminate that from his diet. And once we did, stomach got better, pitched better, felt better. So everybody's different.
And what about after games? I know you mentioned a little bit. Is there anything particular after games that they should be eating?
Really, I mean, the same approach. You know, what you're eating before and after really shouldn't change much. You know, if like, you know, again, these are 14, if we're talking about the 14 to 18-year-olds, if they want to go out after and celebrate, have some pizza, no big deal. Let them be kids. Let them enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, because if they're not playing the next day, not really that big of a deal. Because if they've eaten well for the majority of the day, then go out and splurge a little bit. There's no perfect diet. It really just depends on what their day looks like. Obviously, we want them to make smart choices and try to make sure they limit the fried foods, the processed foods, as much as possible and stick to a well-balanced diet.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the show, and I didn't get a chance to discuss it with you, you mentioned anti-inflammatories. Explain what those are and also how they can be used for recovery.
Yeah, so from a, there's a couple. From food, and I think we're going to maybe talk about supplements a little later.
Yep.
But from a food standpoint, you know, the one thing that is really popular right now as an anti-inflammatory is cherry juice. And there's been some really excellent science to support this, because your fresh, tart cherries, and I'm not talking about the canned cherries or the, you know, the cherries in a can that are sitting in sugar. These are really your fresh, tart cherries or cherry juice, which the juice has about 40 to 50 cherries per drink. And data has shown consuming cherry juice after an intense workout has not only reduced inflammation in the blood, but has also reduced muscle damage that occurs after a hard workout. So after we work out, our muscles are inflamed, there's damage that occurs, and that damage is normal. It's part of the process. But if we can help the body heal a little faster, then that individual maybe feels a little better the next day. And you look at, you know, college or pro guys, college plays, what, 60, 70 games a year, depending on how far they go. Pro guys play 162. That's important. So we really look at fruits and veggies. A lot of your fruits and veggies are anti-inflammatory. So those are the healing foods. Those are the foods that are so important. If you're really trying to get a little better, you know, I see a lot of these young kids, oh, I don't eat any vegetables. And it's because they haven't eaten them in 10 years. They're like 18 and like, oh, I haven't. When's the last time you had broccoli? I don't know. Probably when they were four. So in their mind, like, they don't like any of that stuff. They don't want to eat that stuff. But these are the foods that you have to eat if you're trying to get better and perform better. There's also some supplements we'll talk about a little bit later that are really anti-inflammatory, but things like salmon, omega-3 rich foods, salmon, tuna, halibut, mackerel, sardines, anchovies. I mean, some of those people just don't want to eat, and I understand that. That's why there's fish oil, but those are great anti-inflammatory agents, because we typically eat so much omega-6 from processed foods, that increases inflammation. So we have to counterbalance it with, you know, with some omega-3 rich foods as well.
Now, can you take, you know, one question I had was the cherry juice. I mean, I'm assuming all ages, that's not a problem. And two, whether it's fruit or whether it's vegetables, can that be put into a blender and then chopped up, or is that whole food?
Yeah, so the cherry juice, I mean, that's fine for anybody. It's no different than if you ate the fresh cherries. They're just extracted now into a juice. Mm-hmm. You might think, oh, it's loaded with sugar. It's actually quite low in sugar. And even if it does have a lot of sugar, you know, this is natural occurring sugar from the actual cherry. So the benefits outweigh any negative aspects that you would have. Two, I would never recommend juicing as much as I would blending, because once you juice, you strip a lot of the skin from fruits or vegetables, and that's where a lot of the anti-inflammatory properties lie. So if anything, throw it in your blender and blend it in there. That'll get you also, you'll keep the fiber content. You won't strip it of its fiber, and you'll get a lot more nutritional value by blending it as opposed to juicing it.
Interesting. I remember when I was a kid, and still as of now, sometimes I eat the orange peels, and, you know, I always heard that was pretty good for you. So I guess I was doing the right thing. I'll just keep doing it.
Absolutely. No, even the skin of the apple, you know, they've used the skin of the apple to make supplements because of its natural anti-inflammatory based properties and anti-cancer fighting properties. So I'm not saying it's going to cure anything, but they've been really studying a lot of the skins of fruits for quite a long time.
Very interesting. I love the anti-inflammatory talk. Now, since we talked about dietary supplements, you know, I was seeing on one of the things that you've written that nearly 40 to 50% of high school athletes take dietary supplements. Now, tell us, what's the good, what's the bad, anything young kids should be looking at here?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, kids are thinking, you know, and it's not just kids, it's parents too. I get a lot of emails or calls and says, hey, what can my son take? And I'm like, well, what do they eat? Let's look at their diet first before we even talk about supplementation, because, you know, it's a very loosely regulated industry. There's a lot of products on the market. Anywhere from 20 to 25% of the products that could be sitting on the shelves could either contain what's called a banned substance, something that's banned by Major League Baseball and other professional agencies, or anabolic steroids. So the manufacturers kind of control what goes in there, and some manufacturers basically are putting things in their products that shouldn't be in those products.
Hmm.
So when it comes to starting out as a base, I always start with a good multivitamin and a fish oil. I think that's just a good base to start with, just because most kids are not eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, and that's a good way just at least to maybe act as an insurance policy. The fish oil is important mainly because we're eating so much omega-6 foods right now. So omega-3 is a great natural anti-inflammatory. I have all my athletes on it, especially my pitchers. I mean, pitchers are just important when it comes to inflammation. So fish oil is a good omega-3. That's a start. Other than that, I mean, you know, an NSF certified protein powder, and NSF is a third party testing organization that makes sure if they're taking any type of product, it's third party certified. I ensure even the multi and the fish oil is third party certified. We'll talk about that shortly. But that's really a good base. Other than that, I don't really recommend a lot of supplements unless there's a specific, hey, I really need to get stronger. Maybe we talk about creatine at some point. But before we do, we got to make sure their diet is solid. If they're eating poorly and not eating enough calories, then some of these other supplements don't really, there's no validity to use them.
Are there ones that they just need to stay away, you know, 100%?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing I try to tell these young kids to stay away from are pre-workout supplements. There's no need to use them ever. I mean, if you're relying on that, then you're probably not eating well enough. And, you know, you're not sleeping well enough. I mean, these products are, number one, loaded with a ton of stimulants. Number two, we've seen a lot of them contain banned substances. They're poorly formulated. Most of these pre-workouts cost anywhere from $3 to $5 to make, and they're selling them for $40 to $79. So it's a huge markup, and it's a poorly controlled industry. I mean, the supplement companies are smart. They're putting other ingredients in there that are so low dose, and then they said, all right, I'm just going to put a lot of caffeine, and I'm going to put something called synephrine, which is banned by the NCAA and other Major League Baseball. It's not illegal. It's just banned for competition.
Mm-hmm.
So pre-workouts are number one. Diet pills, they're useless. They're unsafe. I mean, they're not very safe, and for the most part. Also, energy drinks. I mean, when I see kids walking around with some of these energy drinks, and it's like, why do you need that stuff? I'm tired. Well, could you get more rest? Could you be eating better? Because there's potential side effects when you consume these in large amounts. And the young person thinks, oh, if it says one scoop, let's have five scoops because that'll make me bigger faster. So, yeah, those are probably and testosterone boosters. Those are just not necessary for this age group. And that's also something common that these kids are looking to do is they're looking to get bigger and stronger and faster.
You know, you mentioned sleep, and, you know, that's a whole nother topic. I was reading some research on that, and obviously that's extremely important. And hopefully we can get to one of our shows and talk specifically just on sleeping habits and how young athletes can, what kind of sleeping habits they should develop. But one area that I wanted to ask was if a young kid, baseball player, any age, you know, has a pretty good eating habits and is following a pretty good program, do they need the supplements?
Well, again, yes and no. I think it's a good from the omega-3 side, yes. I think everybody should be taking a fish oil because we're not getting enough omega-3 in our diet. I mean, if you're eating salmon 3 days a week, then you can probably scratch that. But most
not many kids are eating salmon, I don't think, right?
right. You know, and very few, based on kids that we've surveyed years ago, are not eating very well. I mean, we surveyed about almost 300 kids about 8 years ago just to kind of get an idea of, hey, give your diet a grade, A, B, C, D, or F. And tell us what you think. 86% of those kids said B or higher. So we're like, we're either surveying some incredible athletes that just or incredible eaters, or they just don't know any better. And then we ask them 13 questions about their diet, fruit and veggie intake, how often you eat, do you take supplements? And based on our feedback and review, we would have given them like a high D or a low D or a high F. Mm-hmm. So perception is I'm eating well, when in reality they weren't. So, yeah, I mean, I would still recommend that good multi and a good fish oil based on that. Other than that, I mean, there's really not a lot of things that you have to rely on. You know, I see a lot of kids taking branched chain amino acids. The research shows it's poor. There's no benefit to use that. It's just a big scam. I'm not saying it can't help, but it's not going to really do much to get you bigger or stronger. You have to have more, you know, you have to have the right meal timing. You have to have enough calories to support. Because one of the problems is these kids are doing 4 and 5 hours a day of activity. That's mm-hmm. just way too much. So it's like, all right, well, I'm going to burn 5,000. I'm only going to eat 4,000 calories. That's why they're running to the supplement store because they can't see results because of the amount of activity they do.
Now, a lot of kids run the one product they've been running, you know, for a long time because I know it's been around a little bit, creatine. I know parents are concerned about it because they you know, they hear some bad things about it, yet there could be some good things. This would be a great time to explain that.
Yeah, creatine's been around a while, and there's still a lot of controversy, I think, in especially in the youth athlete and some of the medical communities. It is actually very safe. But here's the problem when it comes to creatine in the supplement industry. There's about 7 different forms of creatine being used in supplements. The gold standard is still monohydrate. Some of the top researchers of creatine in the world have said, look, if you're not using monohydrate, you're probably not going to see the results that you want to see. Are other forms beneficial? Yeah, they can be, but they're still not the gold standard. The research has shown monohydrate's good. But problem with that is you can get companies could use generic monohydrate, or they can use a gold standard monohydrate that comes from Germany called CreaPure. That's not the name of the product. That's just the type of creatine monohydrate that is used, and that's being used in a lot of products. Now, you know, what is creatine? It's made up of three different amino acids, and it's been really well researched. I mean, probably over 3,000 to 4,000 studies done. A lot of those done in athletic performance. Not a lot. The controversy is, there's not a lot in kids. Well, there actually is. There's a lot done in kids that have had muscular dystrophy, that have had leukemia, that have had, you know, numerous musculoskeletal conditions, and they've used some pretty high dosages, things of 20 to 30 grams in infants and children with no side effects. So, I mean, creatine is in food we eat. If you eat a chicken breast, you're going to get creatine. If you eat pork or steak or fish, there's little amounts of creatine. And we're not talking about, you know, loading up. These kids don't need to load up. But if they just took maybe couple of grams a day, you know, I'm not advocating all of a sudden go run and buy creatine, because it's not going to solve your problem if you're not eating well. But if you're taking the right form, your diet's really good, it's a third-party tested product that's clean, then maybe there's a benefit for you, because the research shows, hey, it might add a little bit of lean muscle, might help your muscles recover. It's starting to have a lot of research to start looking at concussion therapy. That combined with fish oil have been shown to maybe be a potential way to cure and reverse inflammation in the brain after head trauma. So there's a lot of medicinal benefits too for things like creatine. But again, it's not a magic pill. It's not going to all of a sudden make you, you know, if you're trying to get to 200 pounds and you're 150, creatine's not going to get you there. It's going to be your diet.
Tavis, we've got a lot of, you know, we're coming, unfortunately, close to the end here, but we've got a lot of coaches around the world. Some are youth coaches, some are travel coaches. We've got collegiate, we've got national team coaches, and they have all obviously have their own issues in some ways or another. Now, as a coach, you know, they're focusing a lot on, you know, the development of the athlete when it comes to specific skills, eating habits, you know, nutrition is so important. What's your advice to coaches on how they can kind of educate the players or implement it within a, you know, their own programs?
Well, I think they need to partner with someone who's qualified to do that, because I don't recommend the coaches do that. And that might not be the answer we want, but I've seen so many coaches try to do that, and it's just like they don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to try to find a resource that can help, you know, get the right advice to those athletes, whether it's a sports dietitian, you know, a sports nutritionist that's licensed in your area to do that. That's so important, because that's only going to provide more value to what you're trying to accomplish. Coaches have so much responsibility already that, you know, it's like, all right, here's a form or here's a handout. And it's like, well, what does that accomplish? How do we help those kids really, truly change their habits? That's one of the reasons we developed this app, because we're going to have a tool for people very, very soon, within the next couple of months, that they can just say, hey, download this app. And, you know, basically it's going to tell them what to eat based on what they're trying to accomplish. But for now, I think it's partner with a sports dietitian, someone, you know, and if not, we'll help you find somebody. You know, if you don't know of anybody, let me know where you're located, and I'll get somebody out in your area and say, hey, you know, if you're in, like, I'm headed to Pittsburgh tomorrow to go speak at a college or university. So if you're, you know, and you're in Pittsburgh, I'd say, hey, call my friend Leslie. She's one of the best sports dietitians in the industry. If you're here, let me find somebody for you, because we'll get somebody to come hopefully speak to your team.
You know, you answered another question I had, which is great. You know, what's a great way to reach you? And obviously, you know, you've worked with coaches all over the place, and we may have some coaches calling you all from different parts of the world. What's a way to reach you and to be able to communicate with you as a coach?
Yeah, they can email me, and I can, Peter, get you this information so you can post it in the notes. But
sure.
Tavis.Piattoli@TaylorHooton.org. I work for the Taylor Hooton Foundation full time, so that is my daily outreach is trying to come speak at schools and talk to student athletes and coaches and parents. Obviously, you've mentioned MySportsD, great resource for them, and as well. And I'll give you my cell phone number, so if they want to call me personally, you know, I'll give you that so you can post it, and I'm happy to talk to them and answer any questions.
Outstanding. We will place all that information on the show notes. You can go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. This is going to be a great show going up tomorrow, which will be Thursday. The other area I wanted, you know, we've talked a lot, you know, all kinds of different things, and, you know, you're the expert. Is there something that, before we end the show, that you want to let everybody know that we did not discuss that is important to the development of a young athlete?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I think, for when it comes to nutrition, I think the most important thing is just start investing in it, you know, because we see kids invest, you know, kids invest a lot of time in practice, and they put a lot of time in all this special skill development. Parents spend a lot of money, you know, when it comes to travel and equipment and all this stuff. So maybe if they hire a private hitting coach, batting coach, or strength coach. But really, that's all great, but invest, you know, put a little bit of resource in the fuel that's going to actually give your son or daughter the ability to do all the things they're trying to accomplish, because I've seen it. I've seen great athletes, you know, fail because of what they put in their body. You know, I'll use an example. When I was with the Saints, we had a first-round draft pick that after practice every day would eat Sonic, and after 3 years in the league, it was gone. And you were thinking, all right, this is going to be a 10-year Pro Bowl player, great player, but didn't take care of his body. So it really, you know, a lot of these kids are looking up to Major League Baseball players. If you look at a lot of the players now, they've changed the culture in Major League Baseball with what they're feeding. There's chefs now on teams. There's sports dietitians that are consulting with every single team. And now it's down to a science. These guys are like, hey, this is my job. This is my career. If I can play 20 years in Major League Baseball, or even 10, I don't have to work again. I'm set for life. And, you know, so they can make good money, but they have to realize their body is their income. So well, this is really invest in the nutrition piece.
You know, and this is why this show is so important and we find it critical, because when we bring up a topic like this, we're educating parents, players, and coaches. And you said the key word, and sometimes I always wondered about this, investment. You know, when we're looking at the development of a player, why are we not investing more time in the nutritional aspect before we worry about the hitting, the fielding, the throwing, and all that? Because, you know, as you said, the nutritional part is going to help you increase, you know, those areas, become a better fielder, because, you know, you feel better, you're stronger. It's going to help you play better. So these are, you know, again, parents, if you're listening, please go out and invest time. You know, I know you want to spend a lot of money on travel teams, and that's okay if you've got a lot of money, but, you know, and take your time and, you know, itemize what's most important first. And nutrition is definitely number one on the list. Tavis, I want to thank you. This has been an outstanding show. I can't wait to get this out, because I think this is going to help a lot of people, educate a lot of people in the proper area of nutrition. Again, thanks again for being on the show. We hope to hear from you again.
Peter, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor, and I appreciate the time.
All right, everybody, don't forget, you've got to go to Tavis' website. It's mysportsd.com. Join the newsletter. Contact him. We'll have all his information on the show notes. Again, one of the most important topics when it comes to developing young athletes in the sport of baseball. I'm sure it's all sports, but we've specifically talked about the sport of baseball. Don't forget to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. Our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. And Twitter, @baseballout. We're also put Tavis, his Twitter out there. And don't forget, he's with the, you know, Taylor Hooten Foundation. They're doing great things around the U.S. In educating kids on supplements and what to stay away from. There's been some, you know, serious things happening to young kids. Well, that, you know, check the show out. We had that show on, I believe it was 3 or 4 episodes ago. Don't forget, email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox. And coaches, remember, education is the key to the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.